Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Reunited as a trio in the rugby dungeon with Phil back from his journey. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Hello, JB.
Hello, Timothy.
And this is the one of two podcasts that we are releasing today, one of three podcasts that we are releasing this week. This, which is why you need to hit subscribe in your feed, because we've got a Six Nations preview pod coming in a couple of days' time. And right now in your feed, there is also a Saracens salary cap summary podcast. It's the first one where Phil's been able to have a say. And you know what that means. You're going to get balance, you're going to get information, you're going to get fact, and you're going to get the definitive say on Saracens. And I have to say, we've just finished recording it. How do you feel about it?
Good. I think we did a fair job to put different perspectives and put all of the information across that has not always been put across if you read certain viewpoints.
Agreed. There is a lot of rubbish.
Dross. I picked up the Sunday Times this morning. There's some interesting perspectives in there.
There are some very interesting perspectives.
By the way, the man's still tweeting about me. I am blocked. I am blocked, and yet he continues to tweet about me.
Does he?
It's bizarre. It's like the narcissism of small differences. I don't understand why he does it. Just because we believe the majority of the same things.
That's JB, obviously. How do you feel about it? I think we're all pretty much on the same page as well. Saracens,
I think so.
Saracens deserved the initial penalty that the report gave them.
Well, I think all we need to say for this, right, and if you want to know why we think this, we're just going to say the rest of this podcast, they were guilty, they're going down. They deserve it for the following reasons. Well, not even the following reasons. You want to know the reasons, refer back. We're not talking about any salary cap in this.
No.
It's going to be pure rugby.
Because
yes.
To do it justice, we'd need to go for an hour again, I think, which we're not going to do.
No, but we are going to talk about the rugby that's happened this weekend.
Particularly first, the top of the table, Tim.
Well,
wow.
Let's just talk about the...
good day for neutrals.
The neutrals were dancing in the streets this weekend, Tim.
Related to the salary cap, we've had a lot of people asking on Twitter how we feel about the prestige of every Premiership weekend, the interest and the meaningfulness of every Premiership fixture, now that the team who go down has been sealed. Where do you stand on that?
It's probably the biggest shame of the whole salary cap thing is the ruining of the season. I tweeted about this before the Northampton game, and I said, it's a shame because this game literally means nothing to London Irish anymore, which people misconstrue as meaning it means nothing to the players. When you're on a pitch, you always play hard. But does it matter if you finish 8th or 9th, really? Doesn't really matter, does it?
No.
Who does this really... Do you really care? No, of course not. The players will always care when they're on the field, but it just means nothing, though.
And So the punishment is right, but it is disappointing because this could have genuinely been the best relegation battle
ever.
I mean, it was ever in the Premiership.
It's gone from the most exciting Premiership season to just, well, fine.
So if we assume that Saracens might have got close to the other teams and it remained as just a 35-point penalty, Leicester currently on 12 points, London Irish on 17, Wasps on 18, Worcester on 18, Bath on 21, Harlequins on 22, Bristol on 22, Gloucester on 23. Gloucester in fourth. that sort of bottom third, that bottom third, you could have seen a real big team.
Oh, yeah.
Close to the trapdoor, and the excitement that would have generated. The only thing I can say on the flip side is the fact that it is also close means that sixth spot, less so the top four, but that sixth spot you could argue is achievable even for London Irish.
Well, Leicester Tigers, I do genuinely think now, believe they can reach top six, even though they lost again. But they, you know, their mood in camp has improved substantially, particularly as they've now appointed a new head coach, which is exactly what Leicester Tigers needed. They needed another layer of seniority. It's a and genius move.
Promote Jordan Murphy for all the good work he's been doing.
Correct.
Director of rugby.
A long overdue promotion, we can all agree.
Absolutely. But Borthwick will be a good appointment. Definitely.
Would you want Borthwick working underneath you? I mean, I'm not saying he's not an amazing coach, although he's never had a head coach gig, or really a club gig, from what I can remember. In fact, I don't think he's ever worked at a club. Japan, England, yeah. He's going to be at Bristol, never showed up to work.
Yeah, maybe, I mean...
This is his first club gig, and he's a head coach.
I suspect, obviously never worked with him, but I suspect he would have been one of those players, when he's on the pitch, he was also half coach, half player.
Yeah, David Flatman talks very highly of him. He's said it on his podcast a few times. Just knows everything about everything.
Particularly about lineups.
Yes.
My brother was in the Bath Academy coming through. Steve Borthwick was in the first team with Grewcock.
Ooh.
And so Nick spent a lot of time with with Borthwick analysing lineups.
Well, you know that. Okay, so this is a little bit. Well, okay. So when Borthwick was within England, they used Saracens, because of the Saracens link, to test all of the England stuff. And you know who Saracens used to test the England stuff on? London Scottish.
Well, quite often, well, more than that, England used London Scottish to try stuff out on as well.
Yeah, because Hatley would go down to London Scottish. And
So the forwards, so Nick, as head coach of London Scottish, would have sessions against England.
Which is why Thisbury Talk H have got such a good line out. Because who do I call when I need... I call Steve Borthwick, in a way.
You've got a direct line.
Yeah. So Leicester Tigers have got a good man there. So yeah, they'll believe they can move up. But that is the new trap door, isn't it? That is the new battle. Sixth. If you can't get to sixth,
Don't bother.
Yeah. Or just hope that Saracens or Exeter or possibly Northampton win the Heineken Cup. So there's a seventh place.
Yeah, so Saracens are interesting now because they aren't allowed to make the playoffs. So even if they finish fourth, they're not getting in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Well, they can't qualify for Europe.
I don't like that, by the way.
No, I don't either. Why? Why even have them there?
Like
I do get the point, why have them there? I'm not saying they should be kicked out of the league.
I'd kick them out of the league. But I mean, not because I want them out of the league, because there's no point in them just half-arsing it.
Well, and also, so they can't get top four, but they can significantly alter top four.
Yeah.
So if they play all their... If, say, Sale and Gloucester are competing for top four, if they play all of their England stars and put 50 points on Sale, but rest everyone and play the team they did against Harlequins against Gloucester and concede 50 points, that will influence the top four.
And Saracens went away to Gloucester and came up with a... Didn't they sneak a win?
Yeah, they did.
They snuck a win away at Gloucester. They go away to Quins with a very different team, and Quins are 1 point behind Gloucester now.
Yeah.
So they...
I mean, this is an example of Premier Rugby just winging it and not really thinking through the consequences of what you're doing. If they were to keep Saracens in this league, which they have, they've got to give Saracens all the benefits of being in the league, including being able to play in the playoffs.
For the integrity of the competition.
Yeah.
Yes.
Overall.
Because a lot of this is about integrity.
I'd be very much in favour of relegating two teams.
Well, it certainly would make it interesting. I'm not quite there yet, because I'm not sure which two teams have the capability.
Esher and Newcastle.
Esher, Ealing. You mean?
Ealing.
A playoff for the second relegation spot, perhaps?
I could get on board with that. Yeah.
At least then it would mean then you'd be trying to avoid 11th at all costs.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, because at least you'll stay up, but you don't have to go through the embarrassment of the playoff.
Yeah.
But again, it's just more Premiership rugby. They've not thought it through. They've rushed this decision. There should be two guys.
It's very exceptional circumstances. So I can understand not planning for this eventuality.
I mean, it only took me 5 minutes in my basement to come up with that. You know, I don't even own a club.
I feel like we've already talked about Saracens way too much on this after promising we wouldn't.
Well, yeah, we can talk about the impacts of relegation.
Well, the top of the table is looking very, very interesting now. Exeter lost their third match.
As you carry on reminding me, Tim, people are only interested in teams that win and at the top of the table. So what happened at the top of the table this weekend?
Exeter and Northampton both lost their third game of the season.
Amazing stuff.
And Ryan Kiesel, long-time listener of the pod, did ask the question.
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod, yeah.
Did ask the question, is the Premiership more like the NFL now that Saracens aren't for all intents and purposes, in it, in that on any given Sunday, anybody can beat anybody.
I would say...
It's getting that way.
Yes, and certainly next season when Saracens are out of it, mm-hmm. it will be a far more open competition.
Yeah, it'll be incredibly open. Just on the relegation thing, which is one last thing. Now we've seen it, do we feel that ring fencing should be a thing? Now we feel like we do. Does this make you feel any different about ring fencing?
So it's not changed my mind. I'm actually interested in seeing how this season plays out, because I've always been of the opinion, I think, as harsh as relegation is, you need the interest at the bottom of the table.
Yeah.
But conversely, as an England fan and not a fan of any team in the the Gallagher Premiership, there would be some interesting developmental decisions made by teams if there are no there's no possibility of relegation. And just one example I'll give you, which a man I've been admiring this season, Zach Kibirigi,
mm-hmm.
who wasn't playing at Newcastle because Gonova and Sonotti were playing, because yep. there were more important things. Now he's been given a chance. He's looked brilliant.
Dynamite.
Yeah, he's looked absolutely awesome. So that kind of developmental decision would be made easier to blood those younger players rather than bring in external talent.
And my point on that would be, that is fine, and that is what the Pro 14 is for. Now, this
but not
is,
for England players.
No. So, I'm not a huge fan of the Pro 14. I can't remember when I watched a full Pro 14 match. But I do appreciate the purity of the rugby. I do think there is rugby played in the Pro 14, which is beyond that of the Premiership. It's different rugby, too. It's less intense, but it's, you know, it's more beautiful. You know, they play better rugby.
Are you speaking specifically of your beloved Benetton?
Yeah, Benetton would be great. But like, you know, look at what Glasgow did to Sale a few weeks ago, and how they play and how Leinster play. There is some really good rugby to be played there. It's just not my style.
Look at how Ulster are playing
there
at the moment.
Go. Yeah. But those teams are built around non-relegation, and the teams in the Premiership are built for relegation. And that's why, I mean, look at London Irish. Would you really employ a prop like Sakopi Kafu with 105 caps if you thought relegation was not on the... No, you wouldn't.
You wouldn't.
You wouldn't spend half of that cash. So these teams are built differently, and that's why I really hate the fact that relegation isn't going to happen, because the league is built for it. It's not like the Pro 14.
Yeah. I totally understand that. I think there are benefits from... There's possible benefits for both sides. I am still in favour of relegation, though.
I am as well. I can't help thinking that ring fencing is inevitable and going to happen. But personally...
Have I told you my idea?
Personally, I'm not a fan.
Have I told you my idea?
You mentioned it? Oh, you mentioned it on the pod. I was walking around Fort Canning Park in Singapore listening to you mentioning your idea.
And the more I think about
You're a glutton for punishment, Phil, aren't you?
The more I think about it, the more it makes sense. 13 league team. Every year, one team can't play. Right, so you're allowed to sign their players should you want, if they want to accept it. You know, there's something goes on with the contracts there. But imagine having a whole year to prepare for
Also, being a player, that'd be awesome. Like you might sign for a bottom club. I think we might get relegated this year. Let's have a year travelling, paid.
1 year off. Oh, no, because you'd be in a rigorous Jamie Joseph-style camp like he did with
Eddie. You install Eddie Jones as your head coach to get
him
back
in. Oh, my God.
Oh, my word. It'd be the worst job on earth. But then imagine, like, the excitement for the first game. Imagine Exeter found themselves on the naughty step for a year.
I think every weekend the team that went down and were excluded would have to go to a game and sit there all in a row. You'd have a little shame seat.
What about you distribute the players all across the Premiership just to run the water bottles on? Whole tackle bags? Just so they can be in part of a professional environment for now. But I think like the sit-out, it actually would work quite well. You know, they get all their bills paid for centrally for the ground and whatnot and the players, so there's a bit of extra cost for the remaining 12.
Don't war game this too much. The Brits was enough, because JB, obviously will never happen, and nor should it, but it's
the alternative,
fun idea.
If you had to have ring fencing, which I wouldn't want, but if you had to, the alternative, which wouldn't work due to the season, the calendar, but I would prefer each team to get a rest week to do it with.
Yep.
So you have six matches and one team sits out each week, but you then need extra weeks.
What I would say is, if you ring fence, then it has to become more like a franchise system where your place in the league is not... Well, a draft would be awesome. But no, your place in the league is not guaranteed. And if you do not, because you can cut the investment in overseas players in the twilight of their career and put in youngsters, if you don't use the money you can save by that for infrastructure developments, transport links, stadium, all that kind of thing, if you don't, or academy, if you don't demonstrate that you're doing that, you're at risk of being pushed out. Because that keeps things moving forward.
Yeah,
there's new standards every year of what these grounds should look like. There again, do you want grounds standards? Because the Rec has no real standards and it's awesome.
It can hold 14,000 people, or 13,000.
Yeah, but charge them double.
Yeah.
I've always said that.
No, but that's sufficient. Remember when...
mind you, I saw a...
when London Welsh moved to Oxford, because that was the closest ground, or the available... Yeah,
but somewhere like the Rec, I mean, it could be awesome. So they could develop things where Bruce Craig builds a helipad and he has to arrive at every game just before kickoff with the match ball by helicopter.
Just throws it out.
Throws it out there.
Of course, today he couldn't stop because it'd take him over the amount of days he stays in the country for tax. So he just throws the ball out of the helicopter.
From the Caribbean.
Yeah, passing by.
Or
They build a Roman bath tapped into the thermal springs in Bath in the corner of the ground where people can just sit and watch the game.
Wonderful.
When I went to watch the Sharks versus the Jaguars, in Durban, they had
hot tubs
pitch side.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Sadly, I didn't get to enjoy
the hot tubs one of these days.
There's various things you can do.
Yeah. I guess you could just send the team down to the championship and guarantee them to come back. That's probably the more sensible one than the naughty step idea.
Yeah, go and rebuild.
But you're definitely guaranteed to come back, so you can bring with you whatever players that you want.
Even that, because it prevents the likes of an Exeter coming up or Ealing Trailfinders, if they can continue building what they're building, I don't like the idea of that. There's something not right about it.
I mean, if I was... the amount of money that has been piled into championship clubs... the knowledge that there is a promotion, you can't help but feel for those.
Have you heard about the story this week that the rights for Championship Rugby are out to tender and no one was interested until Saracens got relegated? And I'll be like, maybe we should buy this stuff.
Well, partly, I wonder whether wrapped up in that will be the potential fixtures that Saracens are apparently looking to do with international teams, provincial touring teams.
Well, interestingly, I think if Saracens go down, forget ring fencing the Premiership, they should ring fence the Championship. That's the way.
No one else is coming in here.
Yeah, we are done. If you want to play Saracens, you're signing for these boys. So anyway, table
clashes.
Yes. Yeah. So
who watched the Northampton game? Let's go with the Northampton game.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've only seen the highlights because I was pretty jet lagged on Friday evening.
I tell you what, were really impressive.
They were
really muscular. What's the eight's name?
Tuisui
is really, really good.
Yeah.
Like, you can carry bloody hard.
Surprisingly good. I don't even think London Irish thought he was going to be as key a player as he is.
He was awesome. He was absolutely awesome. Every time he had his hands on the ball, made the odds. But I think the most important thing is they came prepared. And where Northampton was so good at moving it wide and they've been so good at, you know, the skillful side of the game, they were closed down completely.
Yeah, you take out Bigger and Laws, Ludlam and...
Furbank and Dingwall.
Furbank, Proctor, Dingwall. You take half a dozen guys. I mean, it seems weird to be talking about Furbank in those terms because it's his breakthrough season. But certainly...
even more so with Dingwall, I feel.
Yeah.
Furbank did a bit last year. They've both been playing well, but Furbank's about 22, 23. Dingwall's 20, I think.
Yeah. But shorn of a couple of those kind of guys, fair play London Irish. Fair play.
Yeah.
They were tough. Yeah, you're right. They're tough as old boots. A bit savvy. Great day for Stephen Myler.
Yeah.
And he was really streetwise.
And I've said this a lot about tens. I don't think you get much worse as you get, as you get older. Like, you don't get less accurate at kicking. You don't all of a sudden forget all the defensive looks that you've seen in the past. In fact, if anything, age sort of works on your side. And I thought Northampton were a little bit quick to get rid of Myler when they did.
Well, do you know what they've been doing a little bit? Putting square pegs in round holes, in the sense that they've had Curtis Rohner out on the wing, not in the centre where he was very effective. They've had Paddy Jackson at fullback.
Yeah.
Because they sort of felt like they didn't have many people fit and they felt like they needed to have him in the team. When you put some square pegs in round holes, suddenly Hepatima and Rona look really good through the midfield. Waisaki Naholo took care of business with Naira Voro. Yeah, they were good. They were impressive. Tough. Now,
they do strike me as very fickle, though. Brittle. Which is they are very, very tough until the point that they're not tough. So I've seen them gut out a few games now and think, yeah, that's reasonable. But I think they get to a stage where they get overwhelmed and then they basically give up the house. And as long as they're sort of battling, and I said it was impressive, losing both their scrum halves, the mean yellow card was so, he was lucky not to get a red, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very, very lucky. So, so stupid. But then, who would have guessed that Blair Cowan is far better than... what's his name?
Nick Phipps.
No, the other one. Bergamasco. Much better than Bergamasco. Substantially better. So, and he had to play nine twice.
And for Northampton, just a little quick... Again, suddenly they couldn't seem to get that gain line, and they kept going to Naira Voro, who... can do that business, but...
Is it me, or does Naira Voro jog into contact? He never looks like he's moving. Maybe he's not moving fast.
He's so big. It's like seeing an A380 land.
Yeah.
It looks like it's not moving.
Yeah, but it is.
So big.
Yeah, it's moving fast enough to get airflow over the wings, so it's got to be unfairly quick.
Yeah.
It just looks like he's always... I think he's very effective against backs, and then the forwards started to rough him up a bit, and he didn't like it very much.
Where he's effective, so I'm not watching this game, but in the past, I've been watching him keenly because he's in my FRD team. As long as he's got the momentum, he's amazing. So if he's got a head of steam, he's got a 5'10 plus yard run up, he will skittle people. If he's anything less than that, it takes him a while to get going because there's so much mass to get moving.
Mm.
So he can look a bit.
I can't help but think he's in for a rather short career. I can see him getting very, very much less effective very quickly.
If his pace goes.
Yeah, even remotely. Because you've just got a big man with no power then.
Yeah.
And what about the red card? Anyone see that?
No, I've not.
What did you think?
It's a red card.
Yeah, I get
but there's
it.
A red card in the same way there's hundreds of those episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the bit. That was the element for me. It's like, yeah.
He's unlucky to get picked up.
I can see that, but. That happens tons of times.
And actually, I think should I say his name for me?
Appy.
Let's go with Appy.
Yawara.
Yeah, yes. I'm going to go with well Appy. Right. If he stays on the field, I genuinely think that Northampton win this because he was their biggest ball carrier by mile. Well, not by miles. Him and Harrison. By the way, I think I'm slowly falling in love with Tamona Harrison.
Very abrasive.
He's so, yeah, so abrasive. Like, and I was amazed he got away with it. I love the idea that, okay, Meehan picks up the Northampton scrum half. Who was it? Reinick. He throws him on the floor. That should be a red. Nobody mentions that Tamona Harrison steams in and does a German suplex on Meehan. He comes round and grabs him by the waist, sort of throws him backwards over his shoulder. It was quite something. And I don't think I'd ever touch a Northampton scrum half if Tamona Harrison is within a 6-foot radius.
Yeah, that's a fair shout.
He's so hard.
As for the other game at the top of the table, did you see...
Which one's this?
The Sale winning at Sandy Park.
Oh, yeah. Okay, go on.
Well, what was it? Where was it? Let me get the message on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast, where you can find us. Rob Sherrington says, Sale versus Exeter. JB, the floor is yours.
Well, I was at Carrington this week. I was doing some interviews. I interviewed Curtis Langdon, Matt Postlethwaite, and James Williams. All in one go, and Neil Briggs, all in a big Sale round table.
Four at a time?
Four at a time. A big four-way. Wow. Five-way, if you include me.
Not quite six ways.
Not quite six ways, no. And what struck me about the atmosphere in the camp is sometimes, and you've been there on media days, Tim, sometimes if it's not going Sale's way, it's not the best of atmospheres, is it? It's a little bit edgy.
I love it every time.
I love it every time. But you kind of know where the camp is at. I would have thought after two disappointing losses in Europe, you might be in for that, but not any sign of it whatsoever. They were supremely confident that they were going to go to Exeter and beat them, and I see why now, because they absolutely did a number. It feels like for all the talent that they've got, it's slowly starting to click. And if it clicks anymore, I think they're not only going to beat Saracens next week, but I think they're going to beat pretty much anyone on their day.
They're least, particularly through this Six Nations period, they are least affected. Because even the players that are in international squads,
yep,
you would imagine will probably go back to them. Like a guy like Byron McGuigan. He's having a great season, by the way.
Byron. Yes.
Yeah. And the one who probably won't come back to him, Tom Curry, they've got a fairly handy ready-made replacement for
him. So Ben Curry, allegedly, will be coming into the England squad.
Scrum half.
Yeah, scrum half Ben Curry. Yeah, so I don't know if you boys have heard this, but there's going to be a big rotation in the England squad about midway through the...
Assuming so, because the absence of Jack Willis, Alex Donbrandt, Nathan Hughes or Taman Harrison or whoever else you might put in as a potential, any one of those, the absence of one of those other players was
Ben Curry's
surprising.
Superb. Yeah. I mean, Ben Curry is almost as good as his brother. And should he have been
almost
picked?
Identical, you might say?
Well, yeah, frankly, yeah.
Now, interesting.
Had Ben been with England for so long and Tom been at Sale, I guarantee that it'd be Ben Curry that they've all talked about. I mean, they really are very, very close. And it's better men than me that can tell them apart from a rugby point of view. And the other guy who really impressed me is Will Cliff. Will Cliff hardly gets any appreciation whatsoever, but the boy can really pass. I mean, he really speeds up the service, and it's so much more predictable with Will Cliff passing the ball. You don't have to worry about any madness.
It's interesting that they're doing so well without Faf. I'm not saying there's a correlation between the two. I actually think the biggest change for Sale this season to last is they've got a proper number 8 ball carrier.
Yep.
And continuing the ball carrier theme, they've got Rowan Janse van Rensburg.
He's awesome.
Those two men, those two South Africans, attract so much attention in a Billy Vunipola kind of fashion that they create space for other people. And I think,
in a Billy and Manu kind of fashion.
Exactly that.
The kind
exactly
of people
that.
Who suck players in,
yeah,
which can be great for them or great for the players around them.
And
yeah, and the sales scrum is always strong. It is always strong, and they've not lost any of that.
And they seem to have sorted their line out as well. They didn't lose a single line out because it has been dodgy the start of the season,
particularly with Acker.
But they disrupted three of Exeter's, which is unusual for Exeter, and they won all their own ball.
So here is where Sale are going to come and stuck. I feel they are too reliant on their talent. If you look through the squad, you go, okay, yeah. If they don't have their good players playing. And they've got to play better than the opposite team, which sounds like a stupid thing. You think, oh well, obviously that's what you have to do, but that's not really the case. Because
just score more points.
Yeah, just score more points. That's exactly it. But actually, there's teams like Exeter who can go down to the third the third man in that team, and you don't necessarily notice it because they're such a cohesive unit. Now, it doesn't always bear out. Look at Saracens today. They were down to their third man in every position. And you can only do it to a certain amount. But Sale aren't quite there yet.
No. And Exeter, they were down to second or third position in a number of places.
Yeah.
And it did tell, particularly in that first half of this game. It seemed to tell.
Yeah. But that's my knock on Sale. Like, if Janse van Rensburg goes down, I do not, for the life of me, know how you replace. Even if
there's
I had
no
access,
like for like.
Yeah, if I had access to the world market of centres, I don't know how I replace that guy. I'm not sure how I replace Sam James either. They're so reliant on these unique talents that, there again, they've just replaced Faf, so what am I talking about?
But they find themselves in third place, 4 points off leaders Exeter, who, without, as you say, shorn of a few players and a couple of injuries, they look beatable even on their home patch. But they are, as we say, they now send a much bigger contingent away to England and a few more in the physio room than normal. So they'll come away from that thinking, all right, we'll take that one.
One last point here. Wales, as they once noticed, but sadly it never happened for them, could do worse than picking Phil Dolman at fullback, but I think that ship has sailed.
Yes.
England could do worse than picking Simon Hammersley for fullback. He has been outstanding.
He's a good player.
Yeah,
he's
really good player.
He probably... he's very, very solid and good decision maker. He probably lacks a bit of top-end pace.
Yeah, I was
going to
say,
what's
the quality you most want in a fullback?
I don't really know. I want him to be there. Because I have seen people like Ugo Monya play fullback, who has all the talent in the world, But you know, if you're not good under that high ball, it doesn't really work
for
you. Yeah,
so exactly. It's like Ouijé. It's like a prop. It's like a prop. You would sort of, as a, like Wales would go, all right, we'll take Thomas Francis, we're going to have solid set piece.
Yeah.
And then if we can develop the other parts of his game, great. That's how I view a fullback. Base camp, catch everything, kick intelligently, nowhere, be in the right place at the right time. Mike Brown had a career of doing that amazingly well, and Simon Hammersley has that.
He does. In spades, but...
I think we're going to see the Elliot Daly experiment continue. Elliot Daly doesn't have that, but he is world-class at the things he has.
Yeah.
And I also like, and I have talked about with other people, we should celebrate the unique and special talents of people. And I can't really say that and contradict myself by going...
Simon Hammersley observation that I made, which is he's always in the right position. Mm-hmm. He's always super cool-headed, makes the right decision. And I was watching him against Bristol, and for whatever reason it is, I don't know if there's an EMP pulse or something, you know, he made the wrong decision and he decided to run it in. I thought, well, okay, you know, maybe he'll catch him off guard. Got turned over on the halfway. Got held up, turned over on the halfway. And I think you're right. He doesn't have that extra sun thing. And he used to, actually, thinking about it back in the Newcastle days, he did used to break a fair few tackles. But I think people are kind of wise that game now. There's something to be said for players that just play to their strengths. And I think that's what he does wonderfully now, is just play to his strengths.
Yeah. I think for a fullback, for international, the absolute minimum would be the right position, right time, and fairly solid under the high ball. There is question marks over whether Elliot Daly consistently exhibits that.
Yeah.
I do wonder if we'll see any of George Furbank the Six Nations.
Maybe Italy. Surely not, otherwise. Could he sneak onto the bench, perhaps?
He could sneak onto the bench.
Elliot Daly fully fit?
Yeah.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware. Mm. Yeah. I think we need other options. England need other options. And Watson's a potential, but he's in the same camp as Elliot Daly in my head. He has the X factor. Unquestionably, he's got the X factor. But does he have the minimum baseline requirements for always...
Is he too talented to be any good?
He was pretty good in the World Cup.
Is he Mike Brown and Ben Smith levels of consistency under the high ball?
Yeah.
And
hard to say he is.
I'm not sure, yeah. I'm not sure I've ever seen that consistency.
Gloucester.
Yeah.
They're in fourth position, but got it handed to them by Bristol, who are 1 point behind them now in fifth.
Yeah.
Who did I pick to go top four? Did I pick Saracens?
Well, yeah, if we take Saracens out of the equation, I picked Saracens.
It's on the whiteboard.
Saracens top four. It says.
I picked Saracens to get into the top four, but not be top, maybe be third or fourth. This is before the salary cap thing, because I thought it was a World Cup year and they had all their players. I think I picked it to be Exeter, Northampton, Sale, Saracens were my four.
I think I said Gloucester, Bristol.
No, I said Exeter, Gloucester. No, did I say Exeter, Gloucester?
You definitely said Sale.
I said Exeter.
I definitely said Bristol.
I said Exeter, Gloucester, Sale, and Saracens.
So I had Exeter, Saracens, Northampton, Gloucester were my two.
I think I had Northampton, and I think I had Exeter, Saracens, and Bristol, I think. No, Gloucester. Gloucester and Bristol.
Well, Bristol play like that, and they could be. Mm. Why have they blown so hot and cold? It's the same as London Irish, isn't it? Because they were awesome. And Nathan Hughes. Oh, my goodness.
Two of the performances Nathan Hughes has put in this season have
been... The first one of the season.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And this one were both phenomenal. Unplayable. He's not been that consistent. I'm not quite sure. I was watching this game thinking... Bristol are playing. They're playing some lovely offloading, lovely handling, but there was a bit more measure to them and their decision making of where to play that stuff and when to play it. But they shut down Gloucester really effectively. Gloucester hardly had a look in. I wonder how much of that is to do with Owen Williams rather.
That's
than
exactly
Cipriani.
What I was going to mention. I have alluded to, if not spoken outright about it in previous podcasts, Gloucester's got a really difficult choice to make coming up. They've got Owen Williams, who's allegedly on something like £400,000, and listen to our last podcast or next podcast, whichever way you want to look at it, and we try and value a player. Well, Owen Williams is right at the height of that because they bought him when they needed a fly half. There was no one available. They went to Leicester, who who were trying to buy George Ford, and the only thing they could do is pay through the nose for Owen Williams. Boom. Here he is. Next year, they then get Danny Cipriani. I think the Danny Cipriani train is starting to run out of steam now.
In England?
In England?
Yes.
And it looks maybe like Gloucester. I mean, is he carrying a knock? Is that why he's not...
My feeling is... I'm not sure for this game. I would assume so.
Yeah, you'd guess so.
Yeah. So now they're thinking, like, what do we do? Do we pay Owen Williams more? Again, even though he's not really been proved. I think I worked out he's earning £30,000 a game. You know, it's a lot of money.
Better than England money.
Yeah.
Well, I think Gloucester are a team that can use the opportunity of the Saracens squad in the right way, because they can identify who their target is, but they might not be able to get them until next year. Mm. But they could say to a player, right, 2021, we'll put all our money in your basket, a Andre Pollard type character, let's say.
Billy Burns type character.
Or or whoever it is. They can do that. But
the way he's playing at the moment, they could do a lot worse.
But then you say to Alex Lazowski or Max Malins, do you want a year just being our 10? Get some rugby in the Premiership, be our 10. You can bridge the gap between the old player and the new player that we've got. And I think that's the sort of deal we might see happening with Saracens players. And I think Gloucester fly half might be a shout if Sippers decides to go off to France or Japan. I don't know what he's doing, because I think Sippers has got another year, hasn't he?
No, this is it. I think this is it.
Didn't he sign an initial 1 year deal?
1 year followed by a two.
I think so. This would be the first year of the two-year deal.
Okay, so they've got another year of Sippers. So that might be irrelevant.
So just on Sippers then, so Owen Williams, they have got to bite the bullet on him, because this is his last year of three. And at the end of this, I either have to shell out one hell of a lot of money or lose him to a Welsh team. Yeah. Because, of course, he'll be offered a quote-unquote market rate contract, which is no such thing.
Yeah.
So they're in a real sticky situation. So, the last part of that jigsaw is this young lad who they're trying to get game time for, and I'm sure he is injured.
Okay.
As I look on the...
Yeah.
Yes, he is injured, because otherwise...
But Gloucester, again, are affected by people not involved in the squad, and it's a weird one. They shouldn't have been beaten that heavily for a team. No. A team with their squad aspiring to be... I don't want to take it away from Bristol. They were outstanding. Yeah.
And they've got the names to come on. So, I mean, I do think that Bristol play better rugby than Gloucester. I think Gloucester play amazing rugby when Cipriani plays amazing rugby. But Bristol are by far the better organised team. And then when Gloucester start playing well, when Gloucester play, you can see what they're doing. They've got their little triangle of forwards every so often, and then Cipriani, Atkinson, Magic. But if you don't have the Magic, what do you have?
The Cipriani, Atkinson pivot looking for runners.
Yeah. But and then after that, you've got nothing.
Mm. Yeah. So. Now, this was a good performance by Bristol.
Yeah, it really was.
Very good performance. Led by Nathan Hughes, who was just everywhere, destructive.
Hmm.
Brilliant. But they're going to want to keep that level of performance, Bristol, which is something they've not been able to maintain.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So just a quick break from this, and we can touch on this more in the Six Nations podcast in a couple of days, but Finn Russell.
Oh, yeah. So
Finn Russell.
Do you know what the rumoured story is?
So, no. Well, this is the point. We know nothing.
Well, I know something.
Officially we know nothing.
Yeah, I've read a few things, a few suggestions.
So the suggestion is about Finn Russell, is there was concern about how much he was drinking. So in response to this concern, as most mature playmaking fly halves would do, he decided to order a pint at lunch.
In Scotland camp.
I said, yeah, Finn, you're not available for the Ireland game anymore. You're welcome to stay with us. And he said, no, thank you. I'm going to go back to Paris. Where he then went and absolutely dispatched someone for Racing, then had a few drinks in the change room, and then that got posted to social media.
That's one picture.
Yeah, of him. there's hope for us yet, lads.
I mean, that rig... As a professional athlete, that is appalling.
I mean, look, Finn Russell is like the Eric Cantona of Manchester United, or the Eric Cantona of Scotland when Eric Cantona was Eric Cantona. Frankly, he should be able to do what he wants. No one is on his level. They're not even close to being on his level. Give him the keys, not after a drink. not after a drink. And just let him run the Scotland show as he wants. I think the biggest problem with Finn Russell is he's so good. I mean, if I was coaching him, I'd definitely feel insecure because, frankly, your best laid plans mean nothing if Finn Russell does not buy into him. Simple.
It will be interesting to see how much criticism Townsend and the SRU, who've been under quite a bit of criticism recently.
Oh, yeah, we never spoke about the bonus, did we?
But it'll be interesting to see. So Finn Russell doesn't play. Scotland finish fifth in the Six Nations. Just how much criticism will there be?
Yeah.
I would say... It's not as bleak as it might have been in other years. Adam Hastings has been playing very well.
Adam Hastings is a good player.
They're not going to put Peter Horn, like, move him from 12 to 10 to do anything stupid like that.
And they've called up Duncan Weir.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That's good for our fantasy rugby draft league because Phil's doing far too well. We could do with him being taken out of your team.
Yeah. Fortunately, I've got him handcuffed with John O'Lance.
Oh, thank God for that.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. I do question the Scotland team. I do. I also think that Gregor Townsend's a very good coach. You've seen him win... what's the league he plays in? The City one, which no one cares about.
Pro 14.
Thank you. we've seen him win Pro 14 titles. I do think he's a good coach, but I just think there's a personality clash here, big time. And also, I really question.
I would have imagined Gregor Townsend and Finn Russell being really on the same wavelength.
I don't
same
know.
Position, same style of play.
But if you've heard Finn Russell's take on the events at the England match, the 38-all draw. Where he said...
Oh, yeah, I've got some great insight on that.
So the quote that I read was Finn Russell saying that he had said to Gregor Townsend at half-time, you're telling us to kick the ball away. Every time we kick the ball away, they're running it back and cutting us open. We're going to play. We're going to play the way I want to play, basically. And that's what they did.
That led
to them almost being within seconds of winning the game.
Where did you read that quote? Finn Russell said
Finn
that.
Russell, yeah.
I can't remember where I read that, but I've actually got I've actually got someone who saw that conversation.
Really?
And he's recounted it to me, yeah.
Oh, so, right. Yeah, I can imagine.
So, that is definitely a thing that happened. I was going to add something else to that as well. Yeah, the World Cup selection was weird for them as well. The fact that they wanted defensive solidity. I mean, I get you want more defence, but you're not a defensive team. You're not going to out-defend South Africa. So just go and pick Hutchinson.
Hutchinson or Jones, or both. Just go
for it. You've got... I mean, Gregor Townsend knows how to play great rugby because he's a great rugby player. He's got a load of other great rugby players.
He's got the bulk of his team for Glasgow who play that rugby.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The profile of his side is not massive, but really quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so I think he's lost his way a bit.
That's interesting. Well, we can pick that up in the Six Nations podcast.
Yeah. Yes.
In a couple of days' time.
Yeah.
Was there any other sort of newsy type things going on? What's been going on?
There was some transfer rumours.
There was an interesting one that Paul Gustard was asked about today.
On Paul Gustard, I'm glad you mentioned him because we didn't mention him earlier on in the Saracens thing. Okay, riddle me this. It came out in the press that Harlequins had been keeping a dossier of alleged breaches by Saracens, which they gladly handed over to Premier Rugby. Do you read that?
Yeah, I love the word dossier.
Dossier.
It's so, it's never, so
never
like,
good if a dossier is being handed over.
Yeah, so like 2003, isn't it? Dossier, or whenever the Iraq War was.
A dossier. Who's got a dossier? So yeah, they've got this dossier. Now, there's a couple of things I'm wondering now. Did they employ Gustard for his knowledge of managing a team or his knowledge of Saracens for their dossier? And if they believed in their dossier, are they then saying, we are happy then to pick up the architect or one of the architects of said dossier? Or are they admitting that they picked up a guy whose past achievements were inflated because of the contents of the dossier? Or worse, is it both? How do these things live alongside each other?
So I don't think any of the coaches, maybe Mark McCall, but other than that, I don't think any of them had really any idea. But they might have had a suspicion that, but...
I guarantee you this. They all knew about the houses.
Yeah, they probably
all knew.
They would have done, but they...
So they just sent Mark McCall and say, well, who's got a house? But, yep. Not Mark McCall, Gustav. Has he got a house? Yep. Has he got image rights? Yep. Yeah, it's unbelievable, actually. I mean, I know Quinns are upset. I get they're upset. But the hypocrisy to hate Saracens so much, but yet to go to Paul Gustard to implement the Saracens' ways and have a bear in your changing room and fly attack helicopters into your ground and you know, do all these Saracens-y things, even though you hate Saracens that much, is remarkable.
Well, I think that they've hired Paul Gustard, the man, and take him at his word. He knew nothing, said nothing, and... yeah, there's been. We've raised question marks at some of the things that he's been doing, but
hey, but they won today
in terms of selection. But they absolutely
won today.
Ripped Saracens apart.
They did, and in a. I mean, if no relegation leads to lots more games like this, as a neutral, where both teams are just those. Both team running everything with no structure to it.
Yeah,
I'll be happy. I'll watch this league.
Yeah,
because it was like a beautiful chaos. That first half in particular was everyone was running everything from everywhere. It was madness, but it was gorgeous because Marcus Smith looked amazing. Dom Brandt looked amazing.
But Dom Brandt did look
Merle
very good.
And Lisicki getting opportunities to run through and over.
I can't believe I dropped him out my fantasy rugby draft side.
What were you thinking?
I did pick up. I got Josh Bassett and.
Ollie Lawrence had a good week this week.
I picked Ollie Lawrence at the start of the season on the advice of the man who I believe to be the guru of all things age grade rugby, Alex Shaw, and he didn't play a single second of rugby until I dropped him. And now he's scoring tries.
Yeah, and I thought Lisicki was injured, or he did have a knock. So I thought, you know what, I'll pick Ollie Lawrence because I reckon he'll play this week. He did play well, but I've still let Lisicki go. He's a little bowling ball of a player.
Well, he used to be running back for Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Expect so. Ollie Lawrence's dad is a cricketer. Do you know that?
No.
He's a really famous cricketer. Someone Lawrence, obviously. No? Maybe look that up.
Don't know.
Yeah.
Don't know. He played well. That was another... very entertaining game. I've only seen the highlights, but Worcester Wasps.
Yeah.
Very close, well, very entertaining game.
Let's just do the Harlequins one first, because obviously there's a guy in there who isn't in the England squad. And
a couple
of
guys in there.
Yeah, well, I guess we'd expect him to be in there, and that's Dom Brandt.
So that's one of the most interesting things from the England selections, is there are two or three players in the league who are close to like-for-like replacements to Billy Vunipola, who's obviously out injured. And the three guys that I would suggest would be Hughes, Dom Brandt, and potentially Ben Morgan. Now, two of those are in pretty good runs of form, very good runs of form. But Eddie Jones has deemed... Well, my interpretation of the squad is that he has seen both of them in camp, deemed them currently not test match animals, and not called them up, and is going to change the construction of the back row accordingly. And I would expect there will be two, probably the smaller guys, so an Underhill and a Curry, for example.
You didn't mention Simmons as well. It would be another one.
Simmons is not like, so he's a very good number eight. He's explosive. He's 30 kilograms lighter than Billy Vunipola.
He's kind of Ben Earlish.
He is Ben Earlish, but Ben Earl is more like a certainly from a stature perspective, is more like a Curry or an Underhill. He's that stature.
Yeah.
So I suspect we'll see two of the smaller players, which might be Ben Earl packing down at number eight, it might be Curry and Underhill, but two of those type players with
Big
then
Courtney.
A Courtney or Itoje packing down at six.
Interesting.
Or it probably won't happen, but Ted Hill is of that taller, rangier, in the same way that Brad Shields has played that role in the past.
Is Brad Shields in the squad?
No.
Oh, and he's gone to Northampton, which Sean mentioned.
Has he?
Has that been announced?
No, he's not going to. He's linked to Northampton, I should
say. Linked to Northampton.
Yeah. Which makes sense because he's got a coach who can get most out of him.
Yeah.
He was captain for him.
He was.
So, that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, in terms of Harlequin's value. We touched on it. Another thing Paul Gustav was asked about was the whereabouts of Carl Sinclair next season, heavily linked to Bristol. And it seems like all the people who might be in the know are saying, that's a done deal.
Hugo Munya, certainly, who does know a few things about Quins, certainly suggests
he does know things about Quins. So on that occasion when there were denials of Marlon Yard going to sale, and Hugo Munya said on telly, no, it's happening.
So I would not put money on Bristol just yet. I think Sinclair could have a very nice home for himself at Sale Sharks, based on the fact that if Will Griff-John wants to continue his international career, he's going to have to go to Cardiff Blues, probably, something like that.
Providing they make a market rate approach for him.
But there again, the Welshman, he tops him up, and you know, he's going to be earning more in Wales than he is elsewhere, I would suggest.
Assuming he gets some caps, yeah.
Yeah, so there is an opening for Tighthead, and there will be some money available for Tighthead, so it would be interesting to see which way he goes. I must say that the Bristol proposition does look good, but I think I would...
Where's of those three clubs, where would he more likely get top four next season?
Oh, where's a question?
Sale, Bristol, Quins.
Sale.
I think so. But what
this
I would
season,
say,
yes. Maybe Bristol next season.
But I would
another year building.
Bristol's a cool place to live as well.
What I would say is Bristol... Well, Manchester's a
Manchester
amazing
is
place.
Yeah, it is.
But what I would say... But Sinclair's style of play, I think he might look at Pat Lamb's philosophy on rugby and go... Oh yeah, I'll have a bit of that. I'll get out there. It won't be Harry Thacker doing all of those sidesteps and offloads. I'll have a bit of that.
Yeah,
we'll sell all the best team with ball in hand, as we've seen multiple times.
Yeah, well, that's a good point because the coaching fit to bring the best. I'd like to see that actually.
I think Alex Donbrandt might be the best player with ball in hand.
Well, so
his offload was outrageous. That first try, I loved it.
So I came up with a saying for Donbrandt. I don't actually believe it, but it just sounds so profound that I think I should use it again, which is world class number eights make their moments. Sadly, Donbrandt only picks his. And I just think it sounds so profound, I'm going to go with it.
I don't really understand it.
Neither do I.
But he picks his moments. It's not like Billy Vanapolo where you just give him a ball continually. Donbrandt, and actually, I said it in a rush. And it sounded like a bit of a slight. What I mean is, he's very, very good at picking lines.
He's very good of the game to pick the lines. Yeah. Is super.
The size and everything is one thing, but the rugby intelligence to hit the right angle at the right moment, that's why he's gone in a year from being a game breaker at university level to a game breaker at a premiership level.
Yeah, carried on. But there again, people like Billy Vanapolo, you just give him the ball in any situation and he makes yards, and I don't think he's quite that.
Well, yeah, but Billy took a little while to... He was always a big guy and always did stuff, but he kind of took a while to become the absolute wrecking ball he is because his physical attributes are so unique. Alex Donbrandt, this is what makes me think, no, I think he's the guy that you should have in the England squad, because if his story doesn't show you that the rugby brain he's got will make up for a bit of conditioning or
so my worry,
a little bit of test match fitness.
My worry would be is because he's good at identifying the opportunities, and I've heard people describe him as playing like a centre, and I can see that. I can. But if he can identify the opportunities where he makes yardage, it's also very easy for the opposition to take away the opportunities where he makes yardage, because it's quite obvious, if that makes sense. You know, he's easier to counter than a Billy who can just do it from any position.
No, but it's the decisions he makes so late, like the slight change of angle just before receiving the ball, or
he always finds a hole. I'll give him that.
Yeah, or half a hole, and he's big and strong and quick enough to go through it. I would. So he's been in the England camp once. He was there last summer. I would like to see him back again. And I think we will.
Yeah.
But I just, in the way that I'm explaining it to myself in my head is that Eddie wants him to get more Premiership experience before more England experience.
Jack Willis looked good again this weekend. Another three turnovers.
Love Jack Willis. Yeah. Love Jack Willis.
He's got the most turnovers in the Premiership with fewer fewer appearances than anyone. He scored a try this weekend. He's a very more and more influence he's having on that Wasps team.
Yeah. All of those things are absolutely correct. I think he's a cracking player. Yeah, I'd love to see him take the next step to international, because I think he's one of those players that he'll just play as well as the standard is around him. I don't think he drops off. So yeah, he'd be, as soon as he's in, I don't think you're getting rid of him.
And I put him in with Dom Brandt in that sense that he kind of has a natural ability to appear at a breakdown and time it perfectly.
Mm. But he's so strong as well. He's so hard. I mean, he's like, I'm going to say, a bigger version of the Currys. Is he bigger? I seem to think he's bigger.
Yeah,
Bit bigger.
I think he is a bit
bigger. Hugely. Those Currys are taller, but they are big boys.
They are massive. Yeah, everyone thinks of the Currys like 6'2" something. No, they're huge.
Yeah, huge. They are 6'2", but they are.
Yeah, but that doesn't do it justice. That doesn't do it justice.
The depth and the depth of them now.
Yeah,
they've got that kind of. They've got that kind of physique that you can only have with after 10 years of solidly shifting tin.
Oh, do you know who surprised me with his size the other day?
So what toilet were you in?
I ran into Cam Redpath, who you don't think of as a big bloke, but he has put on a lot of timber.
Good timber.
Good timber, yeah, but like much, much broader.
Oak.
But like the thing is, with these young lads, you see them when they show up at the club at, say, 18, and by the time they're 21, they're bloody enormous.
Yeah.
That's when you get fed 5,000 calories a day and live in the gym.
Yeah, sounds great.
Steve Diamond, in an interview, has actually quoted that as being the best reason to be a professional rugby player. You get paid to train like a demon for 5 years.
And then those holidays at those Vegas pool parties are a lot of fun.
What were we talking about?
Can't remember. Quinn's spanking Quinn's, Saracens. Quinn's, well, all right, Jackson,
Saracens.
The Jackson Ray incident.
Yes,
referee Luke Pearce at the end of the game, 3 minutes hated to go, and Luke Pearce wanted to have a word with Chris Robshaw and Jackson Ray. Jackson Ray was protesting about something or other. Luke Pearce said, "Right, go away, Manu Vunipola, come here. Right, you're captain for the last 2 minutes. I'm going to talk to you."
Hate it. I think it's so disrespectful, because Jackson Ray is obviously upset about something. Now, Jackson Ray is not some punk. Like, he's not some uppity young kid, or he's a solid club man. He's been at Saracens for a long time. He's integral to what they've done where they've been successful. He's captained the team on numerous occasions, and for him to be rattled about something, he might be, it might be worth you listening to him. You certainly don't have the power to then appoint a brand new captain. I mean, I really, really hate it.
That's the bit I agree with you on. I'm quite happy for Luke Pearce to... And the way maybe he deals with it is he goes, if he's warned him several times, "I've talked to you about this, I'm going to have to award a penalty."
Yeah, I'm going to reverse the penalty.
You go, and I'm going to keep awarding you penalties, and the next time, if you keep doing it, it's a yellow card. It's not Luke Pearce's place to say, "I'm not talking with you anymore."
Yeah, who do you think he is?
Like,
captain now.
If it's enough for a penalty or a yellow card, give him a penalty or a yellow card. You don't say, "You're not captain. You're not talking to me anymore."
Yeah,
I agree with you. That's not his call.
I really hate it.
It did come across that Luke Pearce was kind of overstepping the boundary of his role to try and reappoint Saracens captain.
And I would say that the general response on Twitter was like, "Wow, well done, Luke Pearce, for taking the stand."
There is some sort of like...
And so I think that will be the majority position. I've got to say that will be the majority position. And all I'm saying is, if what Jackson Ray did, you've warned him about loads and he persisted, penalise, yellow card.
Yeah. Jackson Ray has never given me the slightest impression of all my years watching rugby.
Even if it was Owen Farrell, though. Or even if it was Dan Bigger.
Yeah.
Same thing goes.
I mean,
it's Chris Boyd's decision who the Northampton captain
is. Exactly.
Or Mark McCalls.
Or Mark McCalls in this case.
Luke Pearce looks like he's lost control of what he's meant to be doing, which is communicating with the players. "I've failed at this task. Go and get me someone else who I can succeed with." And it was also a Saracens penalty. So whatever Jackson Ray wasn't happy with, he was probably right. because it is his penalty.
I'm all for refs sopping back chat.
The two things are separate.
If he wants to shut Jackson Ray up, brilliant. I'm totally behind that.
Jackson Ray is the only person who was allowed to talk to him. So
yeah, but even that doesn't mean you can talk to a ref however you want.
I mean, to be honest, I don't know what Jackson Ray was saying to him. And if it was like Wayne Barnes in the final, you cheat, he gets a red card. Yeah. Not an issue.
Yeah.
If you're calling into question his integrity, not an issue. But we don't know what he was saying, and yeah, like you say, Tim, it's not his call.
I like that solution. Being like, give him a warning. Listen, Jackson, I can't talk to you like this. If you keep badgering me, you're going to be penalised. I'm going to reverse this decision.
Do you know where this has got its roots from?
Go on.
Nige?
Yeah, basically that. Like, this sort of fetish of talking to players in almost like a disrespectful way. Now, it was sometimes funny. Oh, this isn't football, and all the rest of it. And then you can see players trying to get on TV with their witty quips. Marla does it all the time. Sometimes it's funny. Like, oh, you're boring. Yeah, hilarious. But there again, he cost his team a yellow card by mouthing off to the Dupreez trying to get onto camera. And that's where it's come from. And I don't like it. You know, if you're going to be funny, you can be funny by all means. But first and foremost, do your job. And don't try and get on the cameras by being rude to Jackson Ray. Well, because respect goes both ways.
I'm not going to impute a motive for Luke Pearce.
I can't help but think he's play acting. I
think it would be unfair to suggest that was the motive. It may be, it may not be. I'm sure he would say no. But the point is that I think Luke Pearce will, if he's on Twitter, he will look at Twitter and go, oh, everyone's loving that.
Yeah, which is the worst thing, by the way.
Yeah.
Nail that.
Go do more of that.
Go do more of it. Like, the Nigel Owens thing, this isn't football. Remember who you're talking to. These guys have trained rugby for the best part of all of their life. They're now playing professional rugby. They've stood up in a scrimmage and you're telling them that it's not football. They know it's not football, Nige. They know. Right? You're just doing it for the cameras. And that's exactly I felt that was exactly the same as Luke Pearce today. And refs, for the most part, are always respectful. And the game relies on respect going both ways. You can be firm but respectful.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I'm broadly right with that. Well, I think we're against majority opinion, but I actually hope that some people might have thought about it in a slightly different way now they've just heard that.
Unlikely.
The other game that we've not touched on,
yes,
which, again, I've only seen highlights, but Bath-Leicester, it didn't look like the best game.
Well, it's a pointless game, isn't it? This is the definition of a pointless game. Now that relegation's not a thing, who really cares what happens at the Rack?
Build for next season. Neither team really.
Bath are seventh, 1 point off top six.
Ooh, watch
two,
out.
2 points off fourth. So Bath will be you're writing that off. But Bath will be going, yeah, we can get a playoffs. Of course they will, and they should.
Yeah, but they only beat Leicester, who are bottom of the table by 3 points. So it's just one of those things. This would have been so exciting, and maybe Leicester would have beaten them if relegation was on the table. I mean, 3 points sounds like something doable. But again, I mean, it's not pointless to Bath, because of course they want to be top six.
No, and I don't think that would have entered into their mind. I think they would have, both sides will be, and as we said at the start, they'll be giving 100%.
I don't know. I mean, look, you get rid of...
You're sort of contradicting yourself, because at the very start, talking about London Irish, you went, these are professional players.
They're like the players on the field will try hard in their mind, right? At that time, they'll never say, look, I didn't try that hard. But you ever watched the Dragons play? Like, you know, yeah, they're trying hard, quote unquote. But it's just this, like, malaise that comes over the team. And you know how it is. If you don't feel quite up for it as a team, yeah, you've still tried hard, but you don't get that extra 5% snap or, you know how it is.
Yes. Yeah.
Sadly, one of the best fixtures in the league has always been one of the best fixtures
historically.
Historically, one which we spoke about last week, Tim. Why does everyone hate Bath? Bristol hate Bath, Gloucester hate
Gloucester,
Bath.
Location, Leicester. The history.
Yeah, but like Gloucester don't hate Bristol the same way that they hate Bath.
But they hate Bath because Bath was so much better than everybody else for such a long period of time.
Even Gloucester
in the 80s, 90s. Bath won. Newbury Rugby Club, we used to go every year to the Pilkington Cup final. Mm. This is before, there might have been the Courage League or whatever, I don't know, but it was before there was the Premiership. and we used to go to the Pilkington Cup final every year because that was the big tournament. One club game at Twickenham and cup match, and Bath won it. It used to be Bath pretty much every year. They won the European Cup, didn't they? They won the European Cup, one of the earliest European Cup first.
Yeah, against Brieve.
No, I think it was Brieve. Oh, no, or no, Brieve might have been one of the other teams that won it. Against
Toulouse, right.
Was it? No, I don't know. Anyway, whoever.
Whoever. They definitely won it.
Bath were like the boss, the absolute dominant team. Then Leicester took over as the next dynasty, so there was that overlap where Bath were on the way down, Leicester were on the way up.
So that's why they hate each other.
So that rivalry was they were the two big forces in English rugby. And then people hate Saracens because Saracens have been the biggest force. It's natural when you're at the top, everyone wants to have a pop at you.
It seems Bath... Like, not only one team really hates Leicester. That's Northampton.
I think everyone hates Leicester a little bit,
and everyone
because
used
of their
to.
Success.
Everyone used to. But not when like, they were,
I mean, like,
were...
There's three. Exeter just hate Bath too. Remember that?
Yeah.
If there were salary cap chat back in the day, and I'm not, people would have been, you know, going, "What? You got Lewis Moody and Neil Back and Josh Cromfeld?
Huh?
What?" How are you getting all these players? So, you know, everyone used to say about Leicester, they signed all these players. They were so much better than everybody else.
They were. And they made profit every year.
And then it was Leicester-Wasps, because Wasps and Leicester were the two big ones, two big forces. The successful teams have this rivalry, but the Bath-Leicester one is one that lasted for years and years and years.
So, anyway, so Bath won this pointless game?
Pointless game on a dreadful pitch.
Well done, everyone.
Tom Homer's having a great season.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah.
So, do you remember when we went to watch Sale? This is before the podcast days. And Tom Homer sort of burst onto the scene around then, about 19. We actually had him in a quiz. He was golden boot. Was he golden boot? He was top point scorer. Could be the same thing. He was awesome. He was absolutely awesome for maybe 2 years. And then injuries, and you didn't see him for a couple of years. He moved to Bath. And he seems to be sort of fulfilling that promise. And I hope he does, because if he's even half the player we thought he was when he was 19, he's going to be awesome again. Absolutely awesome. So I'm delighted that he's starting to find his feet there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
he's one of the few bright sparks on what I saw in the game.
So me and Tim went to watch a game. You were doing the match announcing. I can't remember if it was a TV game, but the London Irish team that we watched had Corbusiero in it.
Yeah.
He had John Fisher. Do you remember him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
John Fisher was
Corbusiero and John Fisher have a gym.
Ah, do they?
They're together. They're really good mates.
Jonathan Joseph scored a try.
Was Malignard playing? Or Watson?
Ooh, I don't know if those two were, but definitely Jonathan Joseph went on the outside. Ooh,
Kennedy and Casey were locks, were they?
I can't remember. Yeah. I remember Wahongi was playing for Sale.
Karina Wahongi.
Yeah. I don't know, why did he leave so quick?
That was...
He was like the big signing on big money, back to day standard that he was on big money.
Well, there was some rumours that...
There was some rumours, wasn't there?
That Sale had accidentally given him... an illegal substance.
Oof. Really?
Like a batch that was wrong, so I think he got... I don't know, that was...
Surely if you can prove there's a batch... Anyway.
Anyway, I may have got that completely wrong. There was a reason why all of a sudden there was a very... not very happy ending for Karina Wahongi.
Karina Wahongi, I'm glad you remember his first name because I only remember his second name. He could defend Moors on his own. It was phenomenal to watch. The guy was massive.
He was a giant man.
Yeah, he was meant to turn around Sale on his own. Because this is like, Durham and Sale lost all their players.
But they had, like, Luke McAllister.
Yeah, well, did Luke McAllister... apparently, he packed up his... he was so keen to get out of there. When he finished his last match, he had all of his stuff packed and ready to go. He finished the match, went to the airport, and went home. No more of this for me, thank you.
And they had... who was that Welsh guy that they put a fly half? Nick...
No, not Nick. I know Lee.
No.
Lee Jones.
No.
McLeod.
Nick McLeod.
Nick McLeod.
He was going to be big in Wales. He came from Cardiff Blues. Yeah. They had all sorts of great players.
London Irish had some great players.
Yeah. So yeah, they just thought I'd take us on a trip down memory lane.
We don't have any Premiership next week. Have we missed anyone in particular? There's not going to be anyone upset, is there?
We've
We've done varying levels of service to each one of the games.
Wasps. Whilst I remember. And also, there's some. Are there any transfer rumours about any Saracens boys going anywhere?
Lazowski to Bath is rumoured, or Lazowski or Malins to Bath is one that was popping out today.
Ben Spencer to Bath potentially.
That's going to be a loan, allegedly. I think I know where Billy's going.
Is he going anywhere?
I'll just write it down.
Okay.
I can't announce this, but I've got this.
Can you not point to the jersey on the wall?
No, because there's no jersey on the wall.
That's a clue. That's a clue for anyone who has ever watched the video.
There we go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting.
Big news. I am sworn to secrecy on that.
How confident are you in your source there?
1,000,000% confident.
You're 1,000,000% confident that it's a conversation and a possibility, or you're 1,000,000% confident it's happening?
The conversation has definitely happened. It's 100% happened. But I can't say anymore. I mean, it might not go ahead, but if it does, that's going to be enormous news. And we will break it here first.
Of course. If it goes ahead.
That's big.
Yeah.
That would be big.
Also, some rumours about Wasps, which I don't know how true these are. There's obviously some coaching comings and goings. Monday morning meeting, maybe?
I don't know. JB famous Monday morning meeting.
Yeah, I mean, these always work out well.
Many a Monday morning meeting prediction has where nothing has materialised.
Yeah, so I guess watch this week. I think something might happen at Wasps.
No Premiership fixtures. It's the first Premiership Rugby Cup semi-final next week, which is Exeter against someone. I should know this.
A team.
I'm working the following week against the Sale game, Sale Saracens.
Okay. Ooh. So they've got one consecutive week.
Sale. Yeah, they've got one semi-final one week, one semi-final the other, because it's obviously Six Nations, which we will cover the fixtures off for that.
Elsewhere.
Midweek, we'll do a full Six Nations preview pod, predictions, people to watch out for, dissecting the squads, all the rest of it. All of the good details. 100%.
I've got to get the Premiership Rugby Cup fixture now before I can go, and I'm so desperate for the loo. I need to do that. What is the other game? Oh, man!
Premiership Rugby Cup.
It's not on BBC. They don't cover it.
Exeter Harlequins.
Exeter Harlequins, thank you.
Versus Sale, and the other one is Sale Saracens.
Boom. Right. Listen to the other podcast. Wait in your feed. There'll be one coming in the next couple of days on the Six Nations. Tweet us at Rugby Podcast. He's at J Beardmore. I'm at Cocker. Phil is lurking somewhere. And let the boys
Someone's
play.
DMs.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky. Right.
Perfect.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.